Our scripture for text for this week is one that is familiar. It's a healing story and one of Jesus' ongoing stories. But I invite you to listen to it again for the response as much as the healing. This is Luke, chapter 8, verses 26 through 13. 39, excuse me. Then they arrived at the country of the Gerasenes, which is opposite Galilee. As he stepped out on land, a man of the city who had demons met him. For a long time he had worn no clothes, and he did not live in a house, but in the tombs. When he saw Jesus, he fell down before him and shouted at the top of his voice, "What will you have to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, do not torment me." For Jesus had commanded the unclean spirit to come out of the man. For many times they had seized him. He was kept in a guard and was bound with chains and shackles, but he would break the bonds and be driven by the demon into the wilds. Jesus then asked him, "What is your name?" He said, "Legion," for many demons had entered him. They begged him not to order them to go back into the abyss. Now, there on the hillside, a large herd of swine was feeding, and the demons begged Jesus to let them enter these. So he gave them permission. The demons came out of the man and entered the swine, and the herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned. When the swineherds saw what happened, they ran off and told it in the city and in the country. Then the people came out to see what had happened, and when they came to Jesus, they found the man from whom the demons had gone sitting at the feet of Jesus, clothed and in his right mind. They were afraid. Those who had seen it told them how the one who had been possessed by demons had been healed. Then all the people of the surrounding country of the Gerasenes asked Jesus to leave them, for they were seized by great fear. So he got into the boat and returned. The man from whom the demons had gone begged that he might be with him. But Jesus sent him away, saying, "Return to your home and declare how much God has done for you." So he went away, proclaiming throughout the city how much Jesus had done for him. We know how these stories go. We know how they work. It's the miraculous tale, and they fit a pattern. The healing speaks well and speaks to us as we seek our own healing. We know how these miracles happen. There's someone out there on the edges of the crowd, on the edges of society, who sees Jesus and takes their shot and says, grabs the master's attention. And as he's willing, Jesus heals them, and the onlookers are amazed, and all is right with the world. It's what we expect. It's what miracles are all about, after all, trying to demonstrate who and what Jesus is, and going on there. It's the crowd-pleasing aspect of Jesus' ministries, and we're told it time and again by the gospel writers to reinforce what they're saying, that Jesus is the Son of God. At least this is how we tell these stories. It's our purpose from little on up, and that's good. But I sometimes wonder whether that's the only script that we're working with here. In this particular story, Jesus is not doing anything extraordinary in this encounter on the Sea of Galilee. he had just suggested that they go out and sail to the other side. And the disciples take the trip. Before the story, strange things start happening already. Luke tells us that the storm comes up while they're at sea and while they're crossing, and they're convinced that they were about to die, but they wake up Jesus, and he tells the storm to be still. And it is. So already, the scene is set by Luke to plant the question in the disciples' mind of basically, who is this guy? And what's going on? Which is immediately answered by the afflicted man on the beach when they land. Jesus, Son of the Most High, what have you to do with us? Even the demons know him. It seems clear enough. After some negotiating with the legion, Jesus commands them to come out, and they do so in spectacular fashion, and the man is restored, and there's some pigs in the lake. All is well, and everyone is amazed. You go and tell the story. But that's why I told you to please pay attention to the reactions. Because there are some strange things that do happen here. Because from here on, things get very different. We don't often read the second half of the story because we're after the healing, and that's that. But the reactions are also telling. Curious things happen when Jesus shows up. Dead people rise, the lame walk, the blind see, those afflicted become normal. And the world looking on responds in very different ways when they encounter this stuff. Sometimes they're in awe, sometimes they don't know what to say, but most of the time they just simply freak out. And I get it, we've had 2,000 years to get used to the idea that this is even possible, let alone part of our faith and our recitation of how the world is and how God is. But at the end of the day, this isn't how the world works. This is not what's here. The lame stay lame and try to get by. The blind generally stay blind, and dead people stay dead. It's set for horror films, but that's a different thing. When such a foundational notion of the world and how it works changes, and is called into question, nobody is comfortable. And it's interesting to see how we respond. I actually think that the reaction to the working of Christ is more telling about humanity and us than even necessarily the healing itself. Because when you change the script, weird things happen. Way back in college, I went to Washington, D.C. for a weekend seminar. A friend who was accompanying me and I stayed with some friends at the MVS house in D.C. It's not the best neighborhood. And one evening we were returning after dark and using public transportation, and we were targeted by a couple of guys that let us know that they had knives and they would like our money. So I understood this as your usual stick-up, so I reached for my wallet to comply because, hey, I'm a fairly compliant guy even when you have a knife in my face. But they didn't want my money, just my friends. And they told me to put my money away. And that seriously annoyed me. Because it wasn't fair. I know if you're going to rob us, you rob us, not just the one that you think you can rob. Or the one that you want to rob. It wasn't fair, and I got mad. And I told them that if they were messing with their friend, they were messing with me. And I stood there waving my money in their face, asking them to take it. And one of the thieves literally took my hand and guided it back down towards my pocket, refusing to take my money. "Are you sure?" I asked them. "Yeah, man, don't worry about it." And they hurriedly walked away. I don't entirely know why it was me, my friend and not me or whatever, but apparently these thieves had a conscience that said one person needed to happen when one person wasn't. And I was a little bit indignant about all of this, because my pride was hurt that I wasn't good enough or whatever enough to rob. But I'm also guessing that they were a little bit taken aback when somebody insisted they take your money. The script got all screwed around and weird things happened. They looked a little bit freaked out when they left us. And we don't quite know what happened after that. Jesus changes the script all the time and makes all the difference, and equally weird things happen. He's doing what people least expect, even though it's the most natural thing for him to do in the whole wide world. The world changes for the possessed man in this story, but even more so for the villagers who hear this wonderful, horrible event and respond accordingly. They come out not to praise Jesus for curing this poor man and to see what else is possible, but to simply plead with Jesus to leave them alone. Leave now and never come back. Because we don't know what to do with this sort of change. Not unlike the many voiced demons inside the man, they plead with Jesus to not upset the world that they have grown so fond of, and to leave them alone, because they like what they have better than what Jesus has to offer. They fear the threat of change. As much good as was done in this place, the good could not and would not be accepted because they couldn't wrap their heads around it. It's too scary to have the world as we know it change in such drastic and immediate ways. I think we know what they might have meant. Because to them, this was a catastrophic event. The pigs that were drowned, that was a business disaster. The whole crop was ruined, to say nothing of the livestock that were needed for the next generation. And they must have been wondering, if this is how he starts, where do we go from here? Can we afford to even have him in town? What happens if he changes business as usual in yet another way? Systems always want stability. And they were no doubt glad to see Jesus and the disciples recede again into the mist. After this, for this time in this place, the man, sure, he was healed, but that doesn't mean he was clean. He was possessed and dwelling with pagans and living in the tombs, all of which made him untouchable by the law. And this man that Jesus changes has to choose to go back to work with something new. Jesus showed up in the morning, sets Gennesaret on his ear, and takes off. That's the story. But I think it's also the story with us. As much as we'd like to say it's not so, sometimes we wish that Jesus would just pack up and go away in the boat. We might invite Jesus to come in and change things in our lives and to change us, but that doesn't always mean that we're happy when it actually happens. There are things that we might even haunt us, but we're not sure whether we can let go of because they're so much part of how we know and understand life. When you change, your world changes around you, and that has consequences. I've heard this time and again. My friends in Alcoholics Anonymous say that one of the hardest parts of recovery, harder still than simply coming to terms with who and what you are and stopping drinking, is dealing with the resistance of people who simply don't want you to go on recovering. The people who still want to drink and have a good time and know you as a friend in that context, that all those losses end up feeling pretty big. Whenever we change, the world has to adjust to it, and that's not always easy. One of the best ways to change our world is not to try to actually go out and change the behavior of the other, but to change your reaction to the behavior, so then they have to change their behavior in reaction to that. Sometimes their response is good, sometimes the response is not good. But part of ridding ourselves of anything that would possess us, whatever it is, involves dealing with those who'd rather not change at all. Secondly, this story also speaks to us about the principle of how we need to think carefully when we bring about and wish for change in our world, and how we help other people who want to change. We must realize that changing individuals, as indispensable as it is not complete the change without also reckoning with the systems and the powers and principalities that create the problem in the first place. The people of Gennesaret are not bad people, nor should we think them unfeeling towards the possessed man. They only knew the unknown and the uncontrollable when they saw it, and they needed to put a stop to it. It happened then, and it happens today. There are always obstacles to setting people free. There are always obstacles to people needing their freedom. The systems are set up to benefit from the way things are and to support a status quo. And it's never comfortable to look at our systems. But yet that's what we're invited to time and again. Jesus invites us to look at things and to change things from the ground up, down to their very roots. And that's why he is dangerous. That's why he keeps getting in trouble time and again, because he's always dismantling what is and making what should be and always challenging, which is always scary. It's scary for the world. It's scary for us. It's scary just to even think that change is even possible. Freedom is scary. Change is scary. It alters the script, and we may not be ready for that. Yet Jesus remains always ready to call us into something new, to something more whole, and to call out whatever myriad demons we might be carrying along the way, and to heal of what wounds so deeply. Sometimes we welcome the opportunity. Sometimes all we can do is to ask Jesus to wait until we're a bit more ready and to go away, at least for now. But we must remember this. It's God who writes the script. And when God changes our world, as scary as it may be, as unexpected as it may be, as powerful as it is, God always changes the world for better. And we're invited into that change, to be part of it, and to be changed ourselves. May we approach the healing one with open hearts, willing minds, and fearless spirits, who are willing to be changed yet again and always. May this be our grace-filled calling now and forevermore. Amen.